This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
May I have your attention, please? Now, taking the airwaves on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego's own Gwen and Chris.
Featuring Tony Gwynn Jr.
This is the same guy who had a player karate kick a catcher and was, oh, I love it. This is the way we want to play the game. Like, yeah. Okay, a little rich from you, old Joe.
And Chris Ello.
When I get my Sonic delivered, boy, I just go all, keep all your arms and legs away from my mouth when Sonic arrives.
Gwynn and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
That Kirby Yates song has grown on me.
It is. That's grown on me, too.
Yeah, I like it now. Nothing will ever match Trevor time, but 40 saves for Kirby. Didn't get one last night. Padres got waxed by the Cubs 10-2. Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. We're an hour away from the Padre pregame show, game two of that series. Coming up tonight at Wrigley Field West. My goodness. Were there a lot of Cub fans? And I mean,
they were loud
more
too.
Than Dodger fans, right? Or just louder?
I just felt like there wasn't enough Padre fans like there has been all year to combat what Chicago was bringing.
Right, when the Dodgers come, at least the Padre fans come out to yell against the Dodger fans. But at this point, the Padre fans are not coming out to yell against the Cub fans. And Cub fans are just having a ball, and they had a ball last night at the Padres' expense. The kid, Nico Horner?
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable debut. 3 hits, 4 RBIs. He was only the second Cub player, by the way, they had in the game notes after. He's only the second Cub player in the history of the Cubs ever to have that good of a game in his first game. I mean, Cubs have had some decent players, even though they've never had great teams. I mean, they had Ernie Banks. You know what I mean? They've had some pretty good players along the way, but 3 hits, 4 RBIs is a great debut for the youngster last night. And Padres got whooped. We'll see what happens in game two tonight. I'll have the pregame show coming up a little after 6 o'clock. Also last night, we had games 1 and 2 of Monday Night Football for the year. And game one left, I think, everybody scratching their head a little bit. You had to. Saints and the Texans. Saints take the 27-21 lead with, what was there, about 50 seconds to go when that guy, when Lutz kicked his first field goal.
Yeah.
And the Texans get the ball on their own 25-yard line. They throw one pass to Nuke. I'm not going to forget his nickname again. DeAndre Hopkins. And then one pass down the middle to, was it Stills?
Yep.
It was.
Kenny Stills.
Yeah, making immediate dividends there. And the Texans figured, we win. 38 seconds left, 2 plays, 75-yard drive. And then it took a little twist because the kicker missed the extra point.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they thought the game was going to go to overtime. But
Roughing the kicker, right?
Roughing the kicker, running into the kicker, one or the other. And so they got to try the extra point again, and obviously you're going to miss again. So Houston takes the 28-27 lead. They figure they've got it wrapped up, and they are just the dumbest team in football. At least for those couple of minutes they were, because they just didn't rush the quarterback and they dropped everybody 50 yards back.
Let's leave Drew back here by himself. We'll just put a whole bunch of...
Let's see if in 38 seconds Drew Brees can complete 3 passes. What, are you kidding me? With a timeout left.
That's light work for Drew.
It was light work. That's a great way to put it. Like, this guy works out with Tony Gwynn up here in the fitness, where Fitness Quest 10. He works out harder there than he had to in the fourth quarter last night, completing those 3 easy passes. And granted, it was a 58-yard field goal, but it should have never come to that. I can't, you know, but these teams, they keep doing it, for years and years and years and years, the old prevent defense, and it was ugly. I mean, first the Saints did it, and then the Texans did it. So Saints get that win.
Like, but wouldn't you, like, watch the other team in a prevent defense and go, man, maybe we shouldn't do that when we go back out on this field as they throw two plays and get past us?
Well, the thing that bothers me the most is the fact that NFL coaches, by and large, walk around like they are the smartest people on earth. And I don't mind them thinking that if their last name happens to be Belichick. Other than that, you're not the smartest person on earth. And that even goes for a guy like Romeo Crennel. I mean, he's the defensive coordinator of the Texans. He was the one calling those defenses. Bill O'Brien's the head coach. I would imagine he has the power to walk over and say, let's get into something else here. Let's not just let Drew Brees drive down the field. And both of those guys worked under Belichick. I just can't believe they don't know it, but they're just too scared to do it.
Do you think that because it's a defense they rarely run in a game setting, that that's what leads to a lot of these?
I think that's part of it.
You know what I'm saying?
You don't play prevent defense.
You might practice it at the end of practice. You're not practicing prevent defense for most of practice. You know
I think that's a great point. It's exactly why it doesn't work. A, you're not really pressing any of the receivers, but B, you don't practice doing prevent defense very often. So, you know, look, team, look, okay, I keep putting Belichick on this incredible plateau, and maybe I should point out that last year he did call for a prevent defense on the final play in Miami that had Rob Gronkowski as his last line, and the Dolphins pulled off that miracle. So even Belichick can mess it up
Wasn't a Hail Mary?
No,
like a lateral play, wasn't it?
It was a dumb play by Belichick, though, because he had Gronkowski back there to protect against the Hail Mary because he's the tallest guy. The problem was Miami was 80 yards away, so they weren't going to throw Hail Mary.
Right.
So they threw it underneath, and then it ended up with Gronkowski trying to tackle Kenyon Drake, and he couldn't do it. So even Belichick has messed it up, so I take that back. But it just drives me crazy when you're a fan, I'm a fan, everybody listening, we're all fans of football. We all think we know the game a little bit. We do. We know it a little bit. We've watched a lot of it. We have enough of an opinion that matters. And we've seen the darn prevent defense get chewed up 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And yet these teams do it over and over again. So anyway, that was that one. And then the Raiders looked pretty good in the second game to beat Denver and give John Gruden a nice victory. I got to hand it to those.
I'm sorry. I didn't watch the very end of the Raiders. Did he take a victory lap after the game was over?
I didn't see it either.
I think I saw
it. I was at the Padre game.
I saw, actually,
he run like he was going after the quarterback and
no,
the hard knock?
I mean,
that's funny.
It was like, you know, remember when Cal Ripken broke the record and he went around and
slapping high fives with everybody? Good for Gruden.
CeCe Sabathia posted it. You know, he's not a big fan of Gruden right now.
Okay.
The picture of the video is of him slapping high fives to the crowd, like, after the game is over.
Is that it, Thomas? Did you see it?
Yeah, he took a stroll, like, if they had just... You know, like when the Chargers came back, if they won the AFC Championship, went around and greeted everybody around. That's what he did. He took a walk, at least through the whole black hole section, shaking hands, taking pictures with everybody.
That a boy, dude.
I got it. Number one, attaboy Gruden. But number two, it speaks to what I was honestly just about to say. These Oakland Raider fans have to be considered, in my mind, some of the greatest fans in all of sports.
Their team is leaving them after this
year. Exactly. Their team is leaving, yet these people are fanatical, dressed up to the hilt, and just going absolutely crazy.
It also speaks to how you handle a situation when you're getting ready to leave. They were put on notice, 2 years ago? Listen, this is happening.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not like,
But wouldn't you think in a lot of ways, if you knew that your team was leaving, you would just disown them ahead of time? I think most people would kind of think that
way. I think that would be my initial thought, but apparently the Raider fans, as you said, they don't care.
No, and I think Gruden appreciated it. I really do. I think Gruden said probably to him, though, did you see the one guy with the Chucky mask on?
I did see
they
that.
Showed it. They tweeted out some photos. It was like scary.
Scary
Gruden.
What I was laughing as we sat a little bit higher than you in the press box yesterday was every time they kept putting his face, he just had that like scowl the whole time. Like, it's like, man, I would love to be in your head right now. What are you possibly mad at? You're up 14-0 right now.
He was thinking something through. I tell you what, Gruden's got a lot of new fans.
I feel like he's cussing somebody out in his head like 24/7.
Yeah. He can be my coach any day. Any day of the week.
I told somebody, I played football 1 year, and he had me ready to run through some walls after Hard Knocks. This is an intense character.
They were Denver's nightmare last night.
They were. Knock on wood if you hear me.
That, everybody's doing that all over the country, by the way. In every work establishment in America, people 100%. Are going with that
I think
now.
They talked about it on the broadcast. They're like, they were talking because... Brian Greasy was in the booth, and he said he played against them. And then I think Lewis Riddick was like, all right, guys, knock on wood if you're with me. Or Steve Levy did, who was doing play-by-play.
Steve Levy said that.
Man, Steve has gotten gray, man. He went from like
that
jet black.
That was Steve Levy last night?
Yes, he went from like jet black hair, which was probably colored. But it was still, it was just like to go from jet black to just complete gray was a little shocking yesterday. I didn't even recognize him.
Steve, you got to go a little slow for us.
Right, you got to gradually get to that gray.
All right, AJ Cassavell is next up. We'll talk some MLB.com Padres stuff with him. There's certainly plenty of Padres storylines to continue to follow here as this season winds down. And AJ is one of the best. In fact, he's hosted some shows right here on 97.3 The Fan with us. So we'll talk to him from the ballpark next. And we'll do that after traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
.519, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, sliding through this 5 o'clock hour, resetting the show a little bit, talked a little football last segment. Now we're going to talk some baseball, and no better person to have on the line, joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, AJ Cassavell, MLB.com. AJ, how you doing?
Not bad. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. The season's winding down, and Padres are trying to find their way at the end of the season. What have you been looking for out of this team as the year winds down?
I think I'm kind of looking at the positions that aren't solidified for next year, so I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to guys like Manny Machado, Eric Hosmer, or even necessarily what's going on with Chris Paddock, even though he's interesting down the stretch, Kirby Yates. All those guys have had are doing good things at times, and they've done bad things at times, but they don't really concern me all that much. I'm keeping my focus on what's happening with Luis Urias, what's happening with Ty France, what's happening in the outfield.
Yeah.
I think the things are pretty unsettled right now. And there's a lot that still needs to be decided, and you can say, oh, there's going to be a spring competition, but I think you learn a lot more in a September competition when you're facing playoff-caliber teams who are in playoff races than you will in March when you're facing minor leaguers.
AJ, what do you think about Urias so far? And how long are they going to go with it? I mean, I'm assuming they're going to go the rest of this season with him. Do you think that they dangle him in a trade, or do you really believe that they believe that he is going to eventually be that second baseman of the future?
I don't think they have to be two mutually exclusive things. I think they can believe that he's a second baseman of the future while still kind of heading into the offseason with the idea that, hey, if we can upgrade our pitching in a big way, he's a guy that we might be involved in part of a deal like that. But for now, they haven't seen a whole lot of good at the big league level yet because he's struggled in the time that he's gotten here. Yeah. That doesn't mean they're ready to write him off. I think there's too much to like about his game defensively and the way he reads space in the minor leagues to write him off after a few rough months. That being said, if he's around next season, and I'm assuming that he will be, and the Padres go into next season and he shows these same signs at the beginning of next year and you want to compete, he has to win the second base job. It's not about getting Luis Urias enough time to develop anymore. It's about putting the best second baseman on the field that you can. And what he's done at the end of this season probably hasn't been enough.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think the hourglass of development is running really low. And by the time 2020 rolls around, it'll probably be completely gone, to your point, AJ. The other day, or last Friday, Ben and Woods had AJ Preller on, and he said something that made my antennas really perk up, and that was the fact he was talking about how in today's game, the going currency is young talent. How active do you think the Padres will be, considering all those things that you're watching right now, that you're paying attention to? How active do you think the Padres will be this offseason, whether it be via trade? I'm talking via trade, excuse me, not free agency.
I think they'll be pretty active. Knowing AJ Preller, he likes to kind of stick his nose into things anyway and just kind of just put some feelers out. But I think this offseason might be a little different because he is looking to complete a roster rather than find out some things about some guys. Yeah. I think going into this season, the goal is a little different than what it's going to be next season. This season was kind of a, let's hope we can win. Let's also give some young guys some opportunity. Next season is a, let's give the young guys an opportunity if they've earned it. And so I think he maybe enters the offseason with the mindset that if our outfield isn't good enough, maybe we need to deal for an outfielder. If our rotation isn't good enough, which I think at this point we can say there are pieces there, but it's not good enough on the whole, maybe we need to deal for a starting pitcher. Maybe we deal from this depth of prospects that we have. You find out who the guys are who maybe are blocked to the major leagues positionally or won't necessarily don't have a high ceiling enough to be a superstar, and you use those guys to find a pitcher, to find a outfielder, to find someone that can help you put that roster together, because I think the calculus is different this offseason when you're looking to contend in 2020 definitively rather than last year.
AJ Cassavell always does a great job for us and on MLB.com, joining us here on the SDCCU fan hotline. AJ, are you surprised now, looking throughout this whole season, that we're in September and there are as many question marks with this Padre team as there still is? Or do you think they, as an organization, were hoping to have a few more things settled by now?
Yes, I think they definitely thought that there would be more answers in the outfield, at least.
Right.
I think they probably thought maybe catcher would be a little more solidified. I think we saw a lot of very good things out of Francisco Mejia, but there's some question marks defensively. I think they really hoped second base would have been locked up in Luis Urias' hands by now. The rotation, I think we all could have maybe foreseen this playing out the way it has. And I don't know that the Padres did the wrong thing by entering this season giving so much opportunity to some of their young guys. But we've learned about the young guys that there are some nice pieces in there. Chris Paddock is a piece. Cal Quantrill, his last three starts aside, I think maybe some fatigue's involved. He looks like he could be a piece. There's some guys who could sit at the back end of the rotation, but maybe they need to add in that sense too. And so these questions, you could have foreseen some of them heading into the season. And I don't think maybe you're that upset with still having rotation questions or maybe even still having outfield questions. But some of them, I think the Padres had hoped would have been answered by now. And life would be a lot easier if they did have an answer in center field or if they did have an answer at second base heading into a busy offseason.
AJ Cassavell joins us here, MLB.com, on the SDCCU fan hotline. AJ, I need your help, man. I don't know if I'm jaded, but we're watching Will Myers go on a tear here at the end of the season. And I feel that he's done this the past few years. He gets in the season, he starts swinging the bat well. What are we to make of that? What are we to make of his offensive game right now being as good as it's been all season?
I think you can make of it that he is a very good ball player at times, and then that's it. Because we've seen this before. He can be really good, but he hasn't put it together. And at this point in his career, this is his fifth season as a Padre. I think you can read into the fact that he hasn't put it together for an entire season. We can't enter 2020 expecting him to do that. I don't know what that means in terms of whether they look to trade him during the offseason, whether they bring him back in a role where he could get playing time, but not necessarily everyday playing time from the start. He'd have to kind of earn his way into it. But you can't look at the last 3 weeks of Will Myers' season and say, oh, look at this guy. Look at the positive things he's doing. Let's count on that for 2020, because, quite frankly, the Padres have done that before, and it hasn't worked out in their favor with him.
AJ Cassavell, MLB.com. Last thing for me, AJ, and probably the toughest question, and I don't even think there's an answer to it at this point, but AJ or Andy Green, the future for Andy Green. I don't think there's any reason to think for sure they're letting him go, but I don't get the feeling that there's any reason to think for sure they're bringing him back. I don't know which way they're leaning. Perhaps nobody knows which way they're leaning. I don't know if Andy Green knows which way they're leaning. I guess how I would phrase this question is, how best for me to answer this question when everybody asks me about it?
So you're passing the buck.
I'm passing the buck to you, yeah, because, I mean, people know I'm a work on the radio. They go, so tell me what's happened with Andy Green? And I just don't have a good answer.
Well, the answer is that they're going to sit down at the end of the season and evaluate. And I don't know whether that evaluation will entail only what's going on with Andy Green or whether it will entail maybe if there's other managers available. But I think generally speaking, the organization sentiment around Andy Green is they think he's done a better job than what the fan base thinks, obviously.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that he's coming back for next year. And I think there's some legitimate gripes about Andy Green's management style, and there's some that aren't. And I think some of the nitty-gritty game management, in-game strategy stuff gets a little overblown because I think there's a lot of reasons behind some of the decisions he makes that aren't necessarily geared toward that day or the next day or what's going on. I think maybe on a larger level, that's where the organization is going to look in terms of, are these guys getting better? Is the organization ready to take the next step next season? Is Andy Green that guy? And that's where that's what the discussions will center around. It's not going to center around whether you should have kept Joey Lucchese in for the seventh inning when he had a guy ready in the bullpen, because they're pretty comfortable with how he handles those situations. The question is he the guy that can take this team and this group of pretty talented players, probably the, I think entering next season, it'll be one of the more talented Padres rosters in the last decade. Can he make them better, and can he make them warm to a playoff caliber standard? And that's a question that the Padres themselves haven't really started looking into because they want to gain all the data and all the information that they can from the entire 2019 season, which still obviously has 3 weeks left to go.
Well, AJ, you did a good job handling that buck that was passed to you there.
Yeah, that was really good, AJ. I'm going to congratulate you personally when I see you at the ballpark tonight for that one.
AJ,
so you can just play that clip when people ask you.
That's exactly. I got Scraby to tape it.
AJ, thanks for the time, brother. We'll catch you at the field.
See you later.
All right, thanks, guys.
That was AJ Casavall on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. SDCCU has auto loan rates as low as 3.15% APR, and low rates means low payments. Apply today at SDCCU.com. All right, step away, pay some bills. When we come back, the countdown is up next. We're going to give you the top five stories heading into the Major League Baseball playoffs.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That was such a good Valley View Casino commercial. The general manager came in and congratulated me on it. That was amazing.
He said, Hey.
Sometimes you have to just make do with what you have to make do
and
with.
And you just rolled with it, too. That was the best part.
That's all you can do. Chris Sello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Gwynn and Chris, a little behind-the-scenes stuff here at 5:36. Our Tuesday program heading toward Padre pregame at the top of the hour. And then at 7 o'clock, it'll be the Padres and the Chicago Cubs at Petco Park, now known as Wrigley Field West. Come on, Padre fans. Make some serious... Well, I can't blame the Padre fans. They got beat 10-2 last night. You didn't have a lot of chance to yell back.
It's tough to... can't root when the team isn't playing well.
No, the team's got to give us a little support, and then we'll support back. All right, coming up is... we're going to go back to the question.
Yes.
Which is a segment on the show that Scraby and Odd Thomas love. And I'm always a little skeptical.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't know if the question is really, you know, that great of a thing to be called the question. But you know what? Every time we do it, everybody gets all fired up about
it. They do. And I got fired up on text messages this morning with Thomas.
Well, you did. You guys exchanged like 32 text messages.
Yeah, I was like,
did
I'm
you
out.
Notice that Tony and I were I not involved?
I was like, I'm out. Yeah, I'm not even
actually,
jumping in
I
this.
Went in because it was pretty much Thomas and I fighting over text message with you guys on the group chat. And then I texted Thomas singularly. I was like, how annoyed is Chris at us right now?
Oh, I hate when text is popping up on the
like
phone
he's probably
every
watching
second.
TV and it's...
Yeah, trying to watch a Netflix show and there we go. Do you want to give the question now so people can start forming an opinion?
Yeah, and give them a chance
well,
to call
I think
in as well.
You should, you or no, Todd Thomas.
Thomas.
Todd Thomas's question, so I think he should give it a question because he'll have the most spark in his delivery.
So after last night, we got to watch two Monday Night Football games. I kind of had this idea of thinking, should they get rid of the Thursday Night Football games and make two Monday Night Football games permanently through the whole season? So would you rather get rid of Thursday Night Football and have two Monday Night games or keep it the same as it is right now?
Can we just get rid of Thursday Night Football?
No,
that's not an option?
Well, yeah, you can make that your option too, I guess, if you just want one Monday Night Football game and no Thursday Night Football games. I think Thomas is just coming off the high of having two.
Yeah,
he enjoyed that, but I think he's also
because it was quite early when he was dropping those texts too.
It was like 9 a.m.
He's also speaking for a lot of players in the NFL, though, that would love to see no Thursday Night Football.
That's very true.
Because a lot of guys get hurt on those short weeks. So we'll see. That's the question. 833-288-0973. What are your thoughts on today's question? Should the NFL consider getting rid of Thursday Night Football and just playing on Monday night, or maybe even playing two on Monday night, but no more Thursday night? So that's the question at hand. In the meantime, our countdown begins.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is the countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, today's countdown topic, top five Major League Baseball storylines heading into the postseason. Postseason starts about 3 weeks from right now. So Tony Gwynn Jr. and I have been entrusted to come up with a list of five MLB storylines. Who you want me to go?
I'll go first.
You go.
Number five.
Can the Yankees starting pitching survive?
Good question.
This team is loaded, clearly by their record this year. They are really good. They've lost pretty much their whole roster at one point in the season. Somebody's been injured. And yet they still have the best record, one of the best records in baseball. They have a dynamite bullpen. They have an offense for the ages. But there are lots of question marks surrounding the starting pitching. And with a few guys hurt, CeCe Sabathia being one, it's going to be a question of whether they can weather that storm going into the playoffs and all of a sudden catch fire. We've seen it year after year. Team gets hot. Pitching staff gets hot. Team goes on a run. So can the Yankees starting pitching not be the debilitating factor of their squad?
Okay, my number five is a little more general than that, but I think similar in a lot of ways. Will we see a team use with success the opener in the postseason, much like we saw the Brewers take it all the way to Game 7 of the NL Championship Series last year, much like if Tampa Bay were to advance, they would probably like to do it. And the Yankees might be a team that winds up doing that because of their lack of starting pitching.
Very good. Very good.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I will tell you in advance, I'm rooting against it. I don't ever want the opener to work because I want it to go away. But I think it's going to be a factor in the postseason. And Milwaukee made it work pretty well last year. We'll see who tries it this year.
Number four.
Who will win the American League wild card? You got three teams right now for two spots. The Rays have the top spot by a game and a half over Oakland. Oakland has the second spot by a half game over the Indians. And so the question is, which of those three gets in? And the thing is, it could really change, like literally when we get, as we get closer, it could change every day. Really, Oakland could take a top spot. Tampa could fall out. I personally think Tampa's going to hang on to that top spot. And I think Cleveland will be the second team behind them.
I don't really know who's going to get it because it's so close, like you said. I just am rooting for one thing only in that particular race.
And that's not for the opener to have a chance in it.
Nope.
Nope.
You're almost there. I'm rooting for one person to get into the playoffs out of that group of three teams.
Franmil?
Franmil Reyes. I still love him that much. I hope Cleveland gets into the postseason so the Franimal gets a chance on baseball's biggest stage. Love that guy. Still miss him. All right, my number four is, will replay blow it? Similar to the way the NFL replay blew it last year in the NFC Championship game. And I am still waiting for a Game 7 of a playoff series, or God forbid a World Series, to actually be decided while everybody stands on the field and looks at four umpires huddled around a microphone determining whether somebody is safe or out. And I think that that is going to happen. And when it happens on the biggest stage in baseball, I think you're going to see some big-time complaining about all this replay nonsense. And
good. Let the complaining begin.
I, in a lot of ways, it's almost something I'm rooting for because I think it needs, the replay system needs to be tweaked. And the tweak it needs is eye in the sky, quick look, safe out, let's continue playing ball. But this 10-minute thing every time there's a replay question is driving me. There was a play last night, you and I laughed about it, where a Cub player was called out at third and safe at first on a double play. And they looked at both of them and they could have actually reversed them both,
right,
and called the guy safe at third and out at first on the same play, actually had to. It's too much for me right now. And I think replay is going to rear its ugly head in the postseason.
Number three.
Number three. Who has the best chance of dethroning the Dodgers from winning another NL pennant? Now, a reminder, they've been to the World Series 2 years in a row. But I have this funny feeling that they might not get there this year.
Really?
I do.
You know, the Braves are only 3 games behind them right now.
You took the words out of my mouth. Right. That was going to be my next thing. The Braves have closed the gap as the best team in the National League. And listen, the Nationals probably have the best starting rotation out of all of the teams remaining that are in the
playoffs. If they win the wild card, guess what? They'd probably play the Dodgers.
They probably play the Dodgers. So that's a tough – listen, that's not – the Dodgers don't have as easy as a road as they've had the past couple years. The Braves were young last year. They ran into a hot Brewers team that just ran out of pitching at the end of the day. These teams that are remaining that we are assuming they will face, whether it be Washington or the Braves, they have an abundance of it. Now, Washington's bullpen is still very dicey, very dicey. But you got those three horses there in Corbett.
You know, they're not going to go to an opener.
Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin. So yeah. That's my third storyline.
All right. My number three storyline is the pitching of the Houston Astros. Because I think people may forget about the fact that they added Zach Greinke to this group.
A number three in that rotation,
and with,
by the way.
Yeah, Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander. I don't know that we're going to get a Yankee-Astro showdown for the American League pennant, but it would be a big-time showdown if it occurs, because those three guys would be going up against the Bombers. And I tell you, they always tell you, good pitching beats good hitting. That may be the ultimate challenge of it, because that is some good pitching. But the Yankees and even the Twins, I want to throw in there because they're going to set a record this year at the home runs. There's some good hitting out there, too. So it'll be interesting to see if the good pitching theory holds up for the Astros.
Number two.
How will Minnesota fare once they get into the dance? Because they're 5 games up, and I got to tell you, when Cleveland caught them, I thought Cleveland was going to go ahead and run away with it. Instead, Minnesota has put more space in between themselves and Cleveland, and now I believe Cleveland wins this division. The question is, Their offense is one of the best offenses in baseball, but do they have the pitching that can get them there? And this kind of speaks to what you're talking about. Can an offense carry the load all the way through a playoff run? Haven't seen it yet. I know Houston had a very good offense 2 years ago, but they also had unbelievable pitching. So it's not like they had to put up a whole bunch of runs. They did, but they didn't have to. So I'm interested to see. Minnesota could be one of those teams that gets in the dance and can surprise a whole bunch of people because of their offense.
275 home runs. They're going to break the record, although the Yankees may catch them because the Yankees are up to 270 now.
Right.
My goodness. All right, speaking of the home run, that's my number two storyline. Will the home run win the World Series this year? Because it's been the year of the home run. And I'm looking at the top five teams in home runs, and they are Minnesota, Yankees, Dodgers, Houston, Atlanta. Those are five serious contenders for the World Series title. Could a team like St. Louis, which is 24th in home runs, win a World Series against all of these bombers? Because the question that I have is, you know, the Yankees have hit 270 home runs this year, but I think 250 of them came against the Orioles. So, you know, the pitching is so much better in the postseason. Can the home run carry the day in the playoffs the way it has carried the day in the regular season?
Number one.
Number one to me is an obvious one. Can the Dodgers finally get the job done in the World Series?
That's mine.
I figured it would be.
Same one.
I mean, they've gotten there 2 years in a row, and I've been shouting it from the very beginning, at least from the halfway point of the season. Dodgers have done nothing to upgrade their bullpen. Now all of a sudden, they can't necessarily rely on the horse Kenley Jansen like they have been in the past to clean up these messes. He's trying to get to the finish line himself. I just think this is gonna haunt them, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't get to the World Series at all this year.
I don't like the Dodgers in any way, shape, or form, and I never have. But it would be my wish that they do get to the World Series this year and lose again.
The Buffalo Bill thing.
Yes,
huh?
The Buffalo Bill thing taking place. That would be my ultimate goal. If they get eliminated before that, I'm not going to find it quite as enjoyable as if they get to the World Series again and all of their annoying, whining fans, you know who you are out there, Dodger Blue.
Tell us how you really feel, Chris.
Start crying to me and us about the fact that we have such a, oh, it's so hard to root for the Dodgers because we just, you know, everything we do, nothing matters except what we do in the World Series, and it's really, it's awful being a Dodger fan. No, it's not. Try rooting for the Rockies one season. Try rooting for the Brewers, the Pirates. Try rooting. Stop complaining, Dodger fans. You've been in the World Series two straight years. You got a pretty good chance to make it a third year, and I hope you get there and lose again. There you go.
The countdown is now closed.
I actually don't dislike. There's a lot of Dodger fans I personally like. Might be upset with me right now. But I'll take it.
They might be. Can I update my number of 20 home run hitters real quick since we're here?
Sure.
106. There's been 106 guys this year that have 20 or more home runs in the major leagues.
Wouldn't it be easier to update the number of guys who don't have 20?
There might be. It might be.
That is just insane.
That's insane.
Can I ask you?
Wait, by the way, there are about 15 that have 19. So that number could
it's
jump.
It's going to keep jumping. Because there's still 3 weeks left.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question that's not meant to be a mean question, but do you think you would have hit more home runs if you were playing today, Tony?
A few more.
Not like
10
more?
I wouldn't be getting to 20.
But you'd be hitting maybe 8 a year?
Yeah, I'd say that.
That's pretty good.
Probably 8 to 10.
That's pretty good.
I've seen you swing, Scraby. I think with the ball the way it is now and the pitching the way it is now, you'd hit 5.
Oh, I thought he was going to say none, but I'm good with 5.
No, I'm pretty sure anybody who's a big leaguer, if you were good enough to be in the major leagues, you'd have to have at least 5, just closing your eyes. There used to be actually guys who'd go through whole seasons without a home run.
like players.
Tony raises
his
hand.
Oh, I'm not talking about you. But do you remember that? I know you know this guy, Ben Revere.
Of course I right? played with Ben.
You played with him with the Phillies. Mm-hmm. Didn't he go about 3.5 years without a home run?
I think he got his first one when I was playing with him. It was like his first one in a long time.
Right. But, I mean, now you look at the stats. I mean, everyone's got at least double digits. I mean, you got to be, you know, like just not there.
Yeah.
Because the home runs are the whole deal. All right, Scraby, the phone line's jam-packed over the question. So let's get right to the lines.
You're being very sarcastic.
Go right ahead, Scraby. Bring the first caller on there.
Mr. Scraby, you're on the phone. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, guys.
The question has stirred everybody's interest once again.
Why do you say it like that? It's almost like these guys wanted it to fail. Isn't that true, Thomas?
Well, coming from somebody who loves when I miss a question on the trivia game.
It's completely different.
Why?
Because the question is a participation trophy.
If you're listening out there, come on now. Participate.
Well, here's my thoughts, because when Thomas texted me us this morning, they should get rid of a Thursday night football game and they should do two Monday night football games every single week. My thoughts are, why would the general public want that? The first game starts at 4, the second game starts at 7, so here on the West Coast, we're missing most of the first game driving home from work or something, and then the guys on the East Coast are missing it because the game is not ending until 1 a.m. in the morning. So why would we ever want two Monday Night Football games?
Well, that's the life of Monday Night Football for most of the people on the East Coast usually, anyway.
I lived on the East Coast. It's brutal, but a 1 a.m. game is way more,
but at least
a 10 p.m. start.
But
over
at least
there.
They get to get one game in when they don't really only get to get a half a game
but
in
what
most
about
time.
Us? What about us?
So we miss a piece of one game and we get to all of the second.
Yesterday the game started at 4. I got home at, I don't even know, but the game was 50 seconds. I got home when the field goal was kicked.
Have you heard of a tape record, VCR,
DVR?
I got to get up into the 21st century.
I
just went from tape record to VCR to DVR. At least I got it all in one sentence there before I...
You don't watch DVR anyway.
I watch everything DVR'd. We've already been through this discussion. I DVR every single sporting event.
Yes, you definitely said that.
I don't
and
watch
you guys
any
know
of them
I do,
live.
Because I tell you, no, tell me no scores
right.
all the time.
I don't like to know that. But I think, you know, actually, Thomas's question is a pretty good question. Mm-hmm. I think the problem with it is that it's not one that's, in a lot of ways, it's nice to investigate it for fun, but I think that's all it is. Because the NFL has already taken over Thursday night. They're not giving it back. And they already have Monday night. They're never giving that back. They now have Sunday night. They're not giving that back. You get the idea. The National Football League wants to take over. If they could, they would play a game on Tuesday and Wednesday and Friday as well.
Oh, I know they would.
So I don't think this is a question that has really any credence of ever happening. But Thomas's point is pretty well taken here, because he would get a lot of support from the NFL Players Association.
100%.
They are sick of this Thursday night football game. They hate it.
I love the Thursday. You guys aren't actually fans, which surprised me, but I love the Thursday night football. It gives me something to look forward to.
I'm more of a fan of people and their health. That's what I'm a fan of.
Let's give Tony the Nobel Peace Prize over here.
Because I don't want people tearing their Achilles tendon in Thursday night games when their body takes 3 days to get ready in the first place after Sunday.
I don't know
Do
why.
Do you not watch the Thursday night game for fear of seeing injury?
No, I watch it still. That's the thing is I watch it, but I think it would be a better product if you played, at least go with Thomas's idea of two Monday night games.
I used to work with an NFL player who said that he actually liked the Thursday night games.
He's the only one.
Because once you get started, you're playing football, your adrenaline's pumping, you're good, and then you have a mini vacation after that.
What?
Yeah, you have a mini vacation because you don't have to play on Sunday, and then you don't play again until the following Sunday.
What about the lack of vacation there from Sunday to Thursday?
I think that's
not a big deal, huh?
No, because they're going to be practicing anyway. So now once you get done with your Thursday night game, you watch your film on Friday, you get Saturday, Sunday, Monday off, and then you go back to work on Tuesday.
Yeah, but that's recouping not getting those days the previous week. You finish playing on Sunday,
I'm saying,
and you get a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday game.
All I'm saying is that
I don't know how they
that
do
person
it.
Who played in the NFL said they liked it.
Good for them. I don't believe
must have been offensive line.
I don't believe that
must have been.
I don't believe there's too many players who like that Thursday night game. I mean, that,
I've never
that,
met one that,
that is really looking at the glass half full, as it were. Trying to, you know, to say, look, well, I'm glad because I get time on the other side. You might have four broken bones by that time. But the National Football League's not going to consider this question. That's the problem. They're going to play Thursday night forever now because they've now established it. It's there. They don't even settle for two games on Thanksgiving anymore.
It's four.
No, it's three. But they still got to play a night game on Thursday night of Thanksgiving. They play the two normal Lions in the morning, Cowboys in the afternoon, and then there's a Thursday night game in.
I feel like the Packers, but they stopped doing that. The Lions are the only team that plays
every
Thanksgiving.
Would you just let me finish a thought instead of saying something incorrect in the middle of it?
Oh, my gosh.
If you're going to add something,
oh my gosh,
make it accurate. That's all I ask. Accuracy, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they own Thursday. Look, Sunday night, they've taken that. They're not giving that back. And Monday night, I think the two Monday night games is too many, because I do think the time frame is terrible for the East Coast, and it's not great for the West Coast either. Once a year, fine, but don't be surprised if they don't start doing it more than once a year, because Thursday night football started out as a once a year thing.
Mm-hmm.
So did Sunday night football. So Monday Night Football, when it very first started, was not a once a year, but it was a big time gamble.
What do you think they need to do to make Monday Night Football what it was?
Get rid of Joe Tessitore would be first.
Showtime!
After that, well, they need better matchups. The better matchups are on Sunday nights now because the network pays for them and they give ESPN kind of the cruddier of the two games. You need to make it entertaining, and you need to get some personalities in the booth that people really want to tune in and watch. And I don't have the answer to that, but you know, I'm thinking back to the glory days of Frank and Howard and Dandy Don, and I mean, it's probably just never going to come back again quite that way. But if you had two or three people in the booth that people really, really enjoyed spending 3 hours with,
I think Peyton Manning has to be one of
Dennis
those guys.
Miller.
Oh. No, that didn't work.
It didn't quite work.
They tried it. They gave it a shot. He wasn't the answer. But I imagine you could probably find the three right guys. Tony Romo would be a fair place to start, actually.
Did you hear that he's renegotiating his contract? He's trying to get $10 million a year.
He should.
And people are thinking that if CBS won't pay that, then Monday Night Football will gladly pay Tony Romo $10 million a year.
That might get some people to tune in if Tessitore leaves. Well, just let's take
it. It would be Tony Romo and Joe Tessitore,
though. And Booger McFarlane. They all three be in there. They had the Booger. They bring the Booger mobile back.
I think Booger's out.
No. Oh, okay. You're just going to kick him out, huh?
Well, you know, Monday Night Football used to start at 6 o'clock, and that's what time it is now, and that means I have to pause for station identification.
KWFN KWFN HD1 San Diego Radio.com Sports Station.
Hi, I'm catcher Austin Hedges of the San Diego Padres.
The Padres play here.
2-0 Padres. RBI double. Austin Hedges, a 6-game hitting streak.
And you're listening to the home of the Padres, 97.3 The Fan.
All right. We got a couple minutes left to kick this thing around. Monday Night Football, I don't think it'll ever quite be what it was also for this reason. When Monday Night Football was in its heyday, there were six channels.
That's a great point.
Yeah, no kidding. There wasn't a whole lot of other stuff to
watch.
There
wasn't like Oxygen and Nick Gas and all these other channels.
There are 666 channels now, so... And Netflix and every other thing.
Yeah,
so,
Prime Video.
Certain things probably just never will quite go back to the way they were. But, you know, good football fans are still watching Monday Night Football. I don't think that'll ever change. You know, regardless of the matchups, because of the fantasy aspect and the gambling aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think we got spoiled with Sean McDonough and John Gruden for those, and Mike Tirico for a handful of those years?
Mike Tirico's great.
Well, I think Gruden spoiled us. Mm-hmm. I thought
Gruden was never going to get out of that chair. Yeah, he was turning down jobs left and right.
Yeah, he was good.
But I guess $100 million will make you change.
Yeah, it definitely will.
I mean, how many announcers have there been in your lifetime that you tune in just to watch the game because they're announcing
I would say
football.
Madden and Pat Summerall.
Exactly.
Madden and Pat Summerall, right? And that was the way we all felt growing up with the Monday Night Crew, you know, with Frank and Howard and Dandy Don. And Kurt Gowdy on Sundays was unbelievable.
I like Al Michaels. I do. I'm not a big Chris Collinsworth
Would
guy.
Would you tune in for Al Michaels? Or are you just saying you like him?
I'm just saying I like him.
Yeah,
I don't know. I like Dan Dierdorf was good.
Dan Dierdorf. Well, there's a first.
What about Zonka?
I don't believe I've ever... Zonka?
Larry Zonka, wasn't he... Oh, he wasn't Monday Night Football. He was just a regular... Oh, God, Chris just put his hand...
He was never even a broadcaster of any kind.
Really?
Scraby!
What's the famous college football guy? Oh, Nelly!
Oh, Keith Jackson?
Keith Jackson. I tune in for Keith Jackson.
I like Gus Johnson.
Oh,
I like Gus too.
For Gus. All right. Chick Hearn, now you're getting into all other sports.
Chick's the greatest of all time.
If you open it up to all other sports. But
Vince Scully's not the greatest of all time?
He's right there too. Chick Hearn, I'd put it. I honestly, boy, if I was held to my, you know, like.
Chick Hearn's at the top.
Knife at my throat, you got to pick either Chick Hearn or Vince Scully.
Yeah.
Man, I'd pick Chick Hearn too.
Growing up, Joe Starkey for the 49ers was like the guy. The guy who called
people
the,
have their own on the local field. Guy. Yeah. Well, I met him up at the Cal San Diego State game a few years ago.
Really? Was he a nice guy?
No.
Oh, well, that just ruins everything about
him. I bet I'm totally joking. Okay, it's very nice. Okay, of course he was a very nice guy.
You said no so fast. No, he wasn't.
No, he was not.
Joe was very nice. Mr. Leitner introduced us. All right, we are out of time today. Hopefully you tune in to hear us every single day, and hopefully we make it worth your while. That is certainly our goal. It is Scraby's goal. It is the stated goal of Odd Thomas. And, of course, your friends, Tony Quinn Jr. and Chris Ello. Coming up next, the Padres pregame show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.